Hello everyone, and welcome to Primecast episode 17. This is the news update and announcements. Let's catch up on what's been going on at Privateer Press over the past few weeks. The street date for the Winter Core expansion, as well as the Siege Tarrasque, Zephyr, AC-2 Bison 80mm solos, was announced for Friday, July 14th. That's two waves releasing at the same time. Also, shipping beside them are the Resurrection League support kits, so time to get those leagues going! The Way of the Keeping for Iron Kingdom's Requiem, released in the Privateer Press online store detailing the Marwyn monastic tradition. Get the download and add some piety to your IKRPG game today. In War Machine app news, we've added the next chapter of the Black Tide campaign, the massive Dusk House Kaliss Compendium, and the last four Prime Legacy armies are now live and available for force building. Also in app news, thanks to a spectacular bug, all of the current models rules in development, including future Brineblood Marauders releases, Chimera Shadowflame Shard models, as well as some big unannounced future additions, have been leaked. Was it an accident, or a strategically planned preview to generate hype for our Gen Con release this year? We'll find out in a moment when Chief Creative Officer Matt Wilson spills the beans on spilling the beans. And now, I get to say, roll drums. Oh, and stick around at the end of the last segment. There's a little story on why I say, roll drums. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Primecast episode 17. This is going to be a really good one, and joining me here in the intro is none other than the captain of the ship himself, Matt Wilson. Matt, how you doing today?
Hey, Emmanuel, I'm doing well. How are you?
It is fantastic. Good to hear your voice. Exciting times at Privateer. There's so much going on.
Yeah, it's been a really insane month at Privateer. We've moved. We've rebuilt our production facility. We've shipped two waves. And we just had the biggest spoiler event for War Machine since Mark III was leaked before it was released. So where do you want to start?
Ooh, dealer's choice.
All right. Well, let's talk product releases first, and then we'll get into the really spicy stuff.
Ooh, I like spicy. Sounds delicious.
So literally 2 days after our staff moved into our new building, we got the last of the release waves shipped out. So these are officially releasing this Friday on July 14th. We actually shipped a double wave this time, which included the Winter Core expansion, as well as the 80mm solos like the Siege Terrask, the AC-2 Bison, and the Zephyr. So a lot of good stuff hitting the stores this Friday.
The 80mm solos look fantastic. I cannot get my hands off them. And when I look at them and I put them together and all of the models recently, you can just fly them together. They go together beautifully. And I cannot wait to see these things hitting the table because I know it's going to really liven up things on the table. Oh,
yeah, me too, for sure. You know, we'd hope to have these out the door a couple weeks sooner, but the last few pieces needed to complete a couple of those 80mm solos actually took longer to get delivered than originally anticipated. But they're just days away from hitting store shelves now, and it's pretty exciting to see them in the table for sure. I've got a couple sitting on my desktop right now. It took a matter of seconds, literally, to pop them together, and I can't wait to actually get them painted.
Oh man, how are you going to paint yours? Do you have any special schemes picked out yet?
I'm a traditionalist. I'm a studio scheme guy, so I always usually follow that.
Awesome. So what's next then? When do we expect the next round of releases?
Well, the House Kaliss starter is well into production, and we're hoping to get everything for it from our UK manufacturing partner in the next few weeks. Meanwhile, we're already manufacturing the Brineblood Marauder starter internally. So with our outsourced production, we're still maintaining that gap of about 11 to 12 weeks behind the announced release dates for those products, but we're moving ahead on things like the Brinebloods. And so what we anticipate happening now is that a lot of stuff should be releasing over the summer, and maybe not even in the original order it was planned, because we're going full bore on production from two different places now. So there's a little lag time in the outsourced production due to shipping that we don't have internally. But so I think the House Kaliss and Brinebloods, they may even land kind of pretty close together in terms of their release. We should have a more accurate view of that by the end of the month. And almost certainly, though, the Brinebloods starter will overtake the House Kaliss expansion, I think.
And that's exciting that they're both coming out right around the same time, new armies infusing into the meta, and both of them just look incredible.
They really do. I think the Brine Bloods, that's for sure my next army. But
Me
it's
too.
a lot of stuff coming down the pipe real soon.
That's a lot of new stuff coming soon.
But wait, there's more.
This is where we get into the spicy stuff.
Yes, it is. So by the time players are listening to this, there should be lots of online discussion about the stuff in development that just got spoiled last Friday morning with the app leak. And I'd love to spin this as a well-timed, intentional spoiler to tease out some of the things that we've been working on for Gen Con next month. But in the end, it just happens to be a really well-timed, legitimate bug and leak.
So much stuff. What happened?
Well, basically, a data architecture bug fix executed last week opened up an accidental relocation of what we call the test data to the publicly published data that everyone has access to. Now, the test data is the stuff that is currently in development and play testing and hasn't been finalized for release. So anyone who updated early Friday got a preview of things that we've been working on. Most of it are things that people know are coming from our earlier previews, like the Brine Bloods expansion, the upcoming Shadowflame Shard Army, as well as current progress on Colossals and Gargantuans and other ongoing legacy conversions. But there are a couple things in there that we were planning to spoil in the next week or so on Primecast Plus that we've been working on for Gen Con. All in all, as leaks go, the timing is pretty good, as we know people want to know what we're going to have there at Gen Con so they can plan for it. And certainly the leak is going to get people talking. So in terms of getting the word out, we're just going to lean into the opportunity to start the hype a little earlier than planned and have that discussion.
I had no idea because my app is just in playtest mode, right? And so I open it up and I'm like, oh, da, 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 everything looks normal to me, right? And then I see the post start coming in and I'm like, oh my. But the picture that got shared as unstoppable looked amazing. That piece of art was incredible. The hype is real.
That's just a little piece of it too. Wait till you see the whole thing.
Don't tease me, Matt. Don't
That
tease me. I can't show them pictures on
was
this Primecast.
just a little crop of Magnus the Unstoppable, but in the full image, he's standing there with Invictus. And when you see Invictus, he's a big boy of a warjack. So the important thing for everybody to remember, though, is that any of the stuff that was grabbed from the test data is still in development until it's released publicly. So wait until the official publication date to pass judgment. But of course, it's always fun to get reactions to things early. And we always take that into account in our development process.
Well, as long as the cat's out of the bag, can we talk about Magnus and his big buddy?
There's nothing stopping us now.
We're unstoppable.
What you don't necessarily glean from the leak is that we've been planning a new edition of Magnus the Unstoppable, like I mentioned before, and his super heavy sidekick, Invictus, as a 20th anniversary of War Machine commemorative release. We wanted to do something to celebrate 20 years of War Machine and really look for something that was going to be truly iconic and embodied the game from the beginning, as well as highlighted how it has evolved. So we landed on Magnus as one of the most notorious, infamous, iconic characters in the entire setting. He's outlasted so many other heroes and villains, and he's been both a hero and a villain himself. So, much of the War Machine saga storyline has revolved around Magnus's exploits, from paving the way for the return of the exiled Vintor Railthorn to being instrumental in defeating Kador's conquest of Signar. Whether you've ever played Magnus in any of his forms on the tabletop or not, he's inarguably one of the most indelible and defining characters in the game, and you've probably got some sort of experience with him.
Absolutely. And Magnus originally came with his own light. So like this upgrade of the Warjack is so fitting. It's so evolutionary of his story arc.
It is. And we've incorporated a lot of that into the design of Invictus. So because this is the 20th anniversary celebration, though, we decided to actually break one of our rules for Mark IV. We wanted to do something that everyone could have access to. So Magnus is actually going back to his mercenary roots now, and he will be usable in every Prime army.
I love that so much. Every army?
Every Prime army, literally every army released for Mark IV so far, as well as legacy armies.
Legacy armies too. Oh, you're saying the good stuff, Matt. That's all I want to hear. Come on, keep on giving me.
Yeah, so while we said we wouldn't be doing new development for legacy armies, it felt like everyone should be able to enjoy this anniversary. So both Magnus and Invictus, the very first ever super heavy warjack, will be available to include in every Prime Mark IV as well as Legacy Prime armies.
Now, the listeners will kill me if I don't ask. What about Horde's armies?
Yep, Horde's armies as well. This version of Magnus is actually not a leader. So for the first time, he's a very powerful solo who, as a warcaster, works exclusively with Invictus, his super heavy warjack. So you can drop him into any army, whether it's led by a warcaster or a warlock, and he'll do you good.
Invictus is a monster. And I in my mind's eye, I can just see him riding Invictus around, just like, I guess I'll just go over there, Invictus.
Yeah,
Wee.
he's not quite like riding him, but Invictus is super awesome. And this is where we really highlight the evolution of the game. The first ever super heavy 80 millimeter base warjack. He's really, really big, and he's got a lot of callbacks to the original battle group that came with Magnus the Traitor way back in Mark One. He's got the huge ball and chain like the Mangler. He's got this massive shoulder-mounted obliterator rocket like the Renegade, and he's even got an arc node like the Talon had. And it's all of those. It's like all of those warjacks rolled into one, and he's just truly a beast.
Amazing. Ah, oh, so amazing.
So we'll show off Magnus and Invictus in the next Primecast Plus, which is coming soon. And if you think the idea of them sounds good now, just wait until you see the models. They're really, really beautiful.
So I gotta ask, what about the Sky Raider and Sky Bomber battle engines?
Now, those are a little further out, but again, there's something that are going to be available to Mark IV as well as Legacy armies to include. There's a long history behind these models and the reason that we wanted to do that.
Go on, do tell.
So the Sky Raider, if anybody saw the leaked stuff and its variant, the Sky Bomber, they were actually developed, designed, and digitally sculpted years ago during the Mark III era. However, when we got the sculpt in, we deemed that it was going to be very difficult, if not impossible, to produce with our manufacturing capabilities at the time. It's a huge battle engine, it's very tall, and had a lot of like spindly parts and details, and we were worried about the structural integrity of it as a model. So it ultimately got mothballed until we could get around to re-engineering it. And now with our new direction in 3D printing, though, we dove back into the model with some new skills and techniques at our disposal, and now the Sky Raider and the Sky Bomber are going to become a reality, which is very cool, and we wanted to make sure that they still stayed available to the original armies that they were intended for.
How awesome. And what a great story. I love that, the evolution and the process of privateers manufacturing has led to the opportunity for models that were not even possible in the past.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. We're able to do a lot of things that were either too difficult or too expensive or impractical, and or just the kinds of details that we can put into the models now. It's pretty amazing to be working in this sort of new manufacturing medium.
Mark IV is taken to the skies. Brine Bloods have pig balloon bombers and an airship.
Yeah, we're definitely going all in on the Sky Pirate theme in Mark IV. Of course, there's always more to come.
But wait, there's more.
Well, not right now. For now, it's just going to be for the next leak.
Cannot wait for Gen Con.
All right, let's roll those drums.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back. In this segment, I'm joined with Charles Foster III to talk about War Machine. We're going to dive into some shop talk and a little bit about what's been going on in Charles' world. He has been painting like a madman, putting up insiders like crazy, going out to tournaments, and I just had to stop him for a second and I said, deep breath. And then I need the download. I need the goodies because you have been all over, Charlie. What's going on? How's it going? Welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going? Doing pretty good.
Great to have you on. I feel like it's overdue. I know you're a busy guy, but somebody behind the scenes, always talking to people, always working things, and always doing something exciting. So let's talk about getting ready for events because you have been kind of chronicling that journey both through paint and through social media.
Sure. I am currently celebrating the year of pirates. So
Oh, yes.
all of my time, at least from April to April, I'm planning on doing nothing but pirates in terms of like insiders and getting stuff exciting and ready. The Talion Charter is, of course, what I'm focusing on now because Brine Bloods isn't out completely yet. I just did Admiral Boomhauer on an insider, got her
So
painted
hot.
up.
You did great. That looks so
Thank you.
good.
Thank you. There's actually two of them done. There'll be demo models for Gen Con, and then I'm working on
Nice.
the Reef Troll. Literally, as we are talking, I have three of them sitting in front of me, and then I've got the Deepborn Tyre Troll is in front of me as well. I've got three of those getting ready to get painted up, and
Nice.
that way everything's magnetized, painted, and looking nice for Gen Con for people to come over, try demos of Mark IV if they haven't gotten a chance to do it yet. And then I am patiently waiting for more Brine Blood stuff to be released to the public. And to start getting my hands on and painting and playing those in public as well. And then
No doubt. Go
I
on.
mean, we got even a little bit of a big teaser from the last Primecast Plus. You showed off some of those sweet looking defenses. I want to get
Oh,
my
yeah.
hands on some of those as soon as possible.
Me too. You got to be my Gen Con ninja, man. Those things are going to go fast.
Oh man, I would staff always doesn't get stuff before the public.
I
Like we
know.
intentionally were like the last people who get them. So like I know that I'm going to miss out on them being in Gen Con, and I will just have to patiently wait until I can get my hands on them from the warehouse.
It's so true. But one thing I will say is it'll definitely be worth the wait to see you paint them up because everything I got to play a little bit with your demo models for Gen Con last year when we were showing off the new armies and they looked great. They played great. And so now seeing you dive into Brine Bloods, I'm on the edge of my seat waiting to see how you paint the next one. So I take notes. I'm a mediocre painter at best, as anybody who's on Facebook has probably seen my mediocre paint jobs. And I just. Your paint jobs are so crisp and clean, and I love it. I'm such a fan.
I appreciate the compliment. I try and keep it as simple as possible. I am not a studio level or competition miniature painter. I am a very casual painter, but I will put a little bit of extra time into something. So I try and make the insiders as friendly and approachable as possible. And then I try and watch out for like comments and stuff if people are like, I don't understand how this works. And then I can try and help them through it as much as possible if I didn't make it easy enough for the beginners.
Oh, it's been so helpful. Like even just laying out the colors and being like, all right. So as long as I can get these colors and start laying them on, I can get kind of the foundation of what you have, and then try to catch up on the technique.
No, it's super fun. My problem is I have like hardcore ADD on like what I'm working on because like I'm dedicated to the Air Pirates. I have my Fiona the Blacklist in front of me and I'm basing and painting it. And I was looking through it and I was like, oh my gosh, there's like 84 models here. And while I'm looking at 84 models, I'm already thinking, I'm like, oh, what do I want in my Firebeard list? What do I want for, my Admiral Boomhauer list or my Firequill list, not Firebeard. What do I want in my Firequill list? What do I want in my Boomhauer list? How many Deepborn Dire Trolls am I taking? How many units of, the pig boarding party am I gonna take?
Oh,
Or
definitely.
yeah, it's been one of those things where I've been li doing list theory all day long sitting at home, and I'm like, ah, focus, you have a whole bunch of pirates that you are actively playing in stores. So I need to get on it and get these things painted.
I'm right there with you. Like my faction ADD has been so bad in Mark IV. So we've got the new Mark IV armies, and I'm playing Orgoth, and I love the magnetization, and I've been really enjoying the hobby aspect of like doing waves and building and new tokens and stuff. But I also have like Legacy Infernals and Grimkin, and they're day and night painting differences too. So it's like sometimes I want to paint something bright and cheery, sometimes something dark and sinister, something in between. And so it's like I gotta just paint one army, like just to finish one army and get it on the table for the love of God. But as soon as I think, oh yeah, you know what? I've got my list locked in. I'm good to go. Friday night rolls around and I'm like, but I could be playing this other thing. But I need to paint and build this. But if I paint and build that, then I can't finish this. Well, I guess I'm doing that today.
I think the worst thing is when you're like, all right, I've got my 75 point or my 100 point list, and you're like, I know exactly the models I want to play. You go up to the store, you play like three games with them or four games with them, and you're like, I could switch out this one thing though, and I'd only
Oh
have to
yeah.
paint two other things, so
Oh yeah.
My Bart list has gone through like 9 different jacks in the list. I've had everything from Mariners. I think right now the list is running mules, and people are like, "What are you doing?" I have to say though, they have been the best model that I've played with in terms of fun for Bart. The crit devastation has caused near and dear panics on some opponents.
Oh, definitely.
I had a Sorcha one that for whatever reason she was getting thrown around and slammed into stuff, but I couldn't get those dice to do damage. Damage. I rolled 3 1-1-1s on damage on boosted damage
No.
rolls after she contacted bigger bases. And I was like, oh my gosh, like this is the nightmare scenario. She stood up, feeded, and then blew me off the table. And I was like, okay.
Well, it sounds like we're rolling into the shop talk portion of this, and I would love to dive into kind of where your head's been at getting ready for steamrollers, building lists, and like how your approach has differed maybe in Mark IV.
Sure. I don't know that I have any traditional list building ideas. A lot of times I'll reach out to people that I know are just continuously cranking through lists. Like I'll ping some of the people from the former WTCs, or I'll poke, whoever's around the table, like, "Hey, what do you think of, Bartolo? Let's start making a list on Bart."
Nice.
And then start getting feedback, and they're like, "Mariners seem pretty good." Yeah, Mariners do seem pretty good. Do I want to take units? Maybe I want to take less units. Maybe I want to take more units. So like I think the way that like I've been trying out different things is that I'll try and see if I can find somebody who wants to play like a 50-point game. And the reason I'll do that is because a 50-point game, typically you have to make sacrifices and really focus kind of like your list on a specific thing. So I'll take the caster and I'll take the core pieces that I'm like, I want this to be like the best part of the list and try it at 50 points and then see how it's doing. And if it's not quite getting there, I'll think about it, maybe make some changes, and then like I'll try and push it up to a 75-point list, where I can kind of go, okay, I want a little bit more support. I kind of want to make sure that this list is, getting the performance out of it that I want. And then I'll take it and play a couple 75 points. And then what I'll do is I'll take in my filler pieces for 100 points and my scenario pieces like solos and things that I can use to like get to zones, get to flags, get to objectives. And then I'll really just run it through the grinder of like, does this work at an objective level? Can I play the scenario pieces that I want to play? And if it works, great. And if it doesn't, back to 50 points, and we'll try it again. We'll see if there's a different version of it.
You bring up a really good point about planning for scenario elements. I feel like it is something that I did less of in the previous edition, and I'm doing more intensely now. And maybe it's just how I play, maybe it's the new scenarios, but I feel like being able to get at your opponent's flag and be further up the table is more important than it ever has been. And having those games where it times out and you have scoring parity can be really risky if you're trying to go one way or the other with your strategy. And so I'm now looking at packages going, okay, well, if I take the Cav solo and these three units, they're fast and they can flank, and this guy's got ghostly and he can harass, and that's got a gun, and that this guy can make, and it's like, by the time you've got 15 points dedicated to just fighting a certain element of the table. And that's really exciting for me, especially since now we have things like command cards that can support things at a distance, and you don't necessarily have to have your warcaster following the flanking element to have them have any benefits.
Oh, absolutely. So I think this last year with Mark IV launching, we got to see a lot of new interesting elements go to the table. Defenses are a definite big thing that you have to plan around for. I know that I have mine that I like to run in certain lists, and certain lists I don't want to run them at all.
Absolutely.
Guard towers and 3D terrain have now come back to the table, so the table's more vividly, visually appealing to players as they're playing. But also, spell racks now with Mark IV also give a dynamic way
Oh, yeah.
of how you interact with different, armies on the other side of the table. So, sitting down when I'm looking at my list, I've got my optimal spell rack that I want to use for Brine Bloods, and I'm like, okay, I want this, I want this, and I know exactly how I want my army to play. But when I sit down and look at my opponent, and he's like, "By the way, I've got my all shooting list, and then I've got another list that neither of your lists can deal with," so I have to adjust my spell rack, which changes the play of the list a little bit, and then I have to focus on like what defenses I want to put on the field. And then even more so important, as you were saying, is command cards are a huge thing. So there's a lot of layers to building your list before
Absolutely.
you even get it onto the table, and then kind of reacting once you even have it there, and your opponent and you are looking at each other like, "I'm playing a little bit of list chicken. Do you want to take that list, or do you want to take this list?" So.
I love list chicken. And you brought up an interesting point about defenses. I have been playing with them quite a bit, since playtest, and I really enjoy the dynamic that they bring to the table. I think that it's good and an interesting way to interact. But my question is, how much do you bring the sapper card? How much are defenses playing into your command card selection?
I think defenses probably end up at about a third of my list. There are times when I don't take them at all, when the strategy is so focused on other things. So instead of defenses, sometimes I'll take Old Faithful, or I'll take one of the cards that gives me a little bit more of an advantage to what I'm doing. So if I'm playing, for instance, like Shay, defenses aren't something I really need in the list. He doesn't really get a whole lot of, I mean, there are things you can obviously benefit from, but in terms of like, do I want to spend that card slot on defenses? I think there are better things to take with Shay or with Fiona, so I don't actually take the defenses at all. I'll take things like Hit and Run and Power Swell. Blessing of the Gods is a big one to take in some of those lists, the one you need to be a little bit more aggressive than your opponent. I grew up, playing in Mark II. I played a little bit of Mark I and Mark III. And like my favorite Warcaster back in the day that got me into the game was Harbinger of Menoth. She was my
Nice.
go-to gal.
Oh, yeah.
So I always built lists on the aspect of answering the questions like, hey, I can kind of like a catch-all, like I'm giving you minus two to your attack rolls from, Ashen Veil, minus two from Awe. And I try and put my feet in a place where, I was forcing my opponent to commit to zones, but they weren't able to get their support pieces in. So they were just kind of stuck with awkward war beasts or war jacks in weird places or battle engines in weird places because Harbinger's feet used to keep them out. So it was one of those things now, like when I'm building this now in War 4, like, I have to actually like pose. I feel like I'm posing the question more, like, can you deal with this random thing that I'm doing, or can you not? Like, can you handle 84 models cramming into the zone with Fiona Black and her feet turn of rolling one less dice, or can you not? So it's I think I've changed the dynamic of posing the question instead of trying to answer the question of what the opponent's army was doing versus what my army is doing.
Interesting. Interesting. I can totally get behind that. I tend to be a very focused list builder myself. I know when it comes to the defenses and sapper conversation. So if I have a Warcaster that is like 14-14 or less, right? Those like squishy, my Severiuses, my Dreamers, whatever it happens to be. I want like a series of walls that I can move up the table and like hide behind and be defense ridiculous if my opponent wants to approach me. And sometimes just create lanes that are hard to charge around and in so that I know that I have like a serpentine to fight behind if someone wants to get really deep into my territory. And I tend to use the barrels quite a bit with my Open Fist War Beast or War Jack so that I can have sometimes just it's a pal 15 and two, everything within 2 inches. So like, it can basically be a gun sometimes where you're like, well, my Warjack would have to spend X amount of focus to go in there and punch all these guys to death, or it can just pick up that barrel and throw it. I use the fires with my heavy shooting list just so that I can place it in a zone and be like, all right, if you walk stealth troops into the zone, I will be able to shoot them. It's
Yes.
just nice to have. But Sappers is the card that I am starting to introduce into my assassination lists. Into my lists, I know I'm going to get on the opponent's caster. Whether it be like, the Scarboat, or if I'm playing Sabareth or one of the other, any of the Orgoth casters that really want to get up in the face. I want to be able to remove that wall you're sitting behind and thinking you're nice and safe. Or I want to be able to approach your Warjack with open fists where their barrel is, and I don't want you to blow up all my troops. And so the Sapper card has become more and more important as players have caught on to how important being able to sometimes dictate the battlefield. And
Oh, absolutely.
I really like it. So that's a great little segment here on some shop talk. Is there anything you want to say as a parting shot here about Mark IV, about list building, before we got to roll into our next segment?
I mean, there's way too many cool things coming. I know everybody's been very patient as we're rolling out Mark 4, so thank you for your patience as we get everything going and launching. Kudos to everybody who caught the sneak peek on Magnus last week. And I cannot wait to play games and see everybody at Gen Con. Please bring your Mark IV list, bring your Legacy list, bring an unlimited list if you have the models for it. Let's throw some dice. Come find me, I'll be at Privateer's booth, or I'll be over in the event space.
Heck yeah. And so for anybody who is going to Gen Con, if you get pictures or video and you want to see it show up on our social medias, tag me, tag Privateer Press and say, "Hey, Privateer Press, here are my pictures. Hey, Emmanuel, here are my pictures." And I will make sure it gets in our reels and our stories, and socials on our Twitter, because that is what Gen Con is all about. It's about the people, it's about getting together, and I would love to see it through your lens. So hit us up on social media and let us know what's going on. Charlie, you want to say roll drums?
Roll drums.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back. In this segment, joining me is Marin and Rob, two of the Monpok playtesters who are going to join me and talk about the new Triton releases that have just recently been spoiled on the Privateer Press Insider website.
Hi, I'm Marin. Very excited to be here.
Hi, I'm Rob. I'm doing good. Happy to be here.
I'm glad to have you both here. I know that you have been brimming with excitement to both talk about and share all of the things that we've been working on behind the scenes. And passionately, you have both taken to this like a fish to water, so to speak.
Tritons have been one of my favorite factions for a long time, so I'm really excited to see them finally round that out.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot to love, no matter what level of play you're looking at, whether you're just kitchen table trying to put fish on the table, or if you're trying to win tournaments. I think there's something for everyone to love in this release.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. This is one of my favorite releases. I think it really puts a nice bow on the Triton faction and overall is also a fantastic release for the agenda. And so we're going to dive into a little bit of that now. Marin, why don't you tell us a little bit about these releases? Let's start with Archipelagon and then get into the new units.
Yeah, Archipelagon has a bunch of really fun new rules. On the Alpha side, he has a rule called Dreadnought, which says basically if you've already hurt Archipelagon, his standard-ish 8 defense goes up to 10, a number that we've only seen on two Zors until this point. And in Hyper, he gets a really cool ability called Tides of War, which allows him to make one extra attack Blaster Brawl if you have any other monsters on the table. But if he's your last monster standing when he goes hyper, he gets to make two extra attacks each turn. So it's basically like Swift Strike, but it can be ultimate weapons sometimes. And this pairs really well with his excellent blast attack, a range 4 blast attack that on both Alpha and Hyper side has 5 boost dice and carries the same two special rules, collateral damage, which we've seen before on a couple of monsters, which says if this attack hits an enemy monster, every unit that's next to that monster also gets hurt by the attack, gets damaged. And then he has Scald, which says if he hits a model with that attack, the next attack made that turn against that model gets two extra boost dice. So he can help your partner by clearing a screen out in front while he's in Alpha, and then in Hyper, he can shoot the enemy and then attack them with the extra boost dice he got from Scald, which is really cool.
Wow. So there's a lot to unpack here, and even more we didn't necessarily touch on, but let's kind of take it through those steps. So, Dreadnought, I think, is a really interesting way to interact with this alpha because the monster itself doesn't look, I wouldn't say, like tanky up front, but with the combination of thick skin and this ability to raise his defense, so to speak, to withdraw into that shell, he can be really hard to set up chains of attacks, especially if you're playing with, say, two monsters, because that's when your opponent wants to pick them up, throw them into a building, pick them up again, and throw them into another building. And doing those kind of chains against Archipelagon are really difficult. But it also makes you have to think, well, if I attack Archipelagon and I put him in hyper, then he'll have access to Tides of War. And Tides of War
gets more attacks if Archipelagon is the last monster. So you can have to deal with his high defense and make him the first monster to go, or you can deal with his attack output and make him the second monster to go.
I think you touched on it, but Dreadnought, I think, offers a really interesting puzzle for your opponent, because one of the really standard lines of play you'll see is ramming a building that's screening a monster onto the monster and then going with an attack on it. But Dreadnought doesn't specify being attacked, it just says damage, so the ram will actually bump his defense up for the attack that comes afterwards.
If you want to get really silly, technically speaking, if you're going to, if you shoot the preceptor who has the reciprocate action and you've somehow managed to take damage already on your turn, you'll also have the plus two defense against the reciprocate blast that gets shot back at you.
So there was one rule that we didn't cover on Archipelagon that also ties in with the unit. So before we move on, let's talk about Sever.
So Sever is a really interesting rule. It says that this attack does not trigger special rules from enemy models. So that's going to be a really large list that I'm sure we're going to get posted up somewhere sometime soon. But it covers a lot.
Yeah, some of the really big ones. So he has it on only on his brawl attack in Alpha. In Hyper, he gets it on power, which gets absolutely wild. But for that brawl in particular, you're really looking at rules that are going to be on units when he's making those early descreening attacks, like Incubate on the Meat Slave or Invasive Species on the Humasoid, two very strong rules that basically allow the unit that you kill to replace itself with another unit. Sever completely gets through that. Also really big for getting through the or for preventing the Riled special rule from triggering, where if you damage or destroy a model with that rule, normally your opponent would get a power die. Now they don't.
Great way to deal with those pesky mold berserkers when they pop up. So what are some of the things that Sever might turn off when Archipelagon is in hyper or using that power attack?
The really big ones are abilities that your opponent is going to use to shuffle their own monster's position, like most commonly Tantrum or Reposition, abilities that trigger when you attack them, and then they go, oh, you thought I was going to be here? I'm actually over here now.
Stormatovore's Rex Parasite comes to mind, as well as Mucustos when they have that, you hurt me, and then I steal your power. He just says, I think that covers some of the basics about Archipelagon. How does Archipelagon play with the other Triton monsters, and where does he fit in?
So something we haven't seen yet in Tritons is a monster that's got a traditional 1v1. Now, Archipelagon really fills that role, and then some, by having potentially ultimate weapon.
That covers it pretty on sort of a baseline level. Archipelagon is also the only dedicated blasting model as far as monsters go in the Tritons, but he still keeps with their themes of being these huge damage soaks, being immune to fire damage, and the theme of being a speed 5 pedestrian.
There's definitely a lot of obvious strengths and drawbacks to the faction. I think that some of the interesting lines that we see with Archipelagon and some of these units as well is adding additional boost dice to attack, you know, making it rain, so to speak, all of those extra blue dice. And that is something that you see congruent through a lot of different things, as well as the ability to be deceptive in some way, whether it's deceptively mobile, deceptively defensive, deceptively offensive. Each one of their ways that they play can be a little murky. And so I enjoy that design space for them. Are there any parting shots we want to make about Archipelagon here before we transition into the units?
He looks like a grumpy old man, and I love it.
Let's roll into the units. As far as our units go, these new Triton units offer some really interesting and unique play within the faction. And then additionally, they also open up a lot of lines of play within the agenda. So I think this is a great opportunity to first talk about the units and how they play in the faction, and then how we transition into that agenda discussion. So, Rob, why don't we talk about Orca Huntsman and how it plays both in the faction here and with some of these other units in this package?
So the Orca Huntsman's actually my favorite unit out of this entire pack. Not only because it's just a Street Shark, it's a straight up Moby Lick from Street Sharks, but it's a really good dedicated punching unit that also has a buff for allies. So It's got a pretty standard 2-1 brawl with the great trigger of tag, but it also has the special rule scout. So any unit that's any enemy model that's attacked adjacent to it gets an additional boost die. So it's pretty much always going to be a 2-2 brawl as opposed to the 2-1. So again, with that deceptiveness that you said in the for the Triton faction.
Awesome. Marin, why don't you tell us about the Kraken Hatchling?
I mean, you've picked my favorite one for this one. So the Kraken Hatchling brings a phenomenal rule that we've seen twice in Destroyers into the Protectors, which is Beachhead. What Beachhead says is if this model's occupying an objective space, which is any spawn node, including the one that it came out of, power node or negative node, you can, once per spawn phase, spawn a faction unit next to it, essentially making it its own little spawn zone. On top of that, it carries a new mobility rule. So keeping in the theme of mobility here with tag from the Orca Huntsman, it has a new action called Catapult, which allows it to essentially confer its own speed onto another unit that's next to it. Ally or enemy, interestingly enough. And while it doesn't have an attack, it does have the ability to kill anything that punches it with the Spike Shield special rule as well.
Awesome. I love how it has so many different interplays in between both how it gets up the field with, say, the Orca Huntsman tagging it into place, being able to spawn units where they need to be further afield, and then launching them into the fray when it comes time for it.
Yeah, actually, one of my favorite things to do with this has been to use it to help secure a Sun Industries building in the spawn phase, so that I can then use that ambush ability on the Sun Industries building to get a different unit next to it that I can catapult. That's not necessarily a Triton unit.
Oh, I love it. What a great interplay. So much fun to see on the table. And speaking of fun to see on the table, I can't wait to talk about our next unit because it's a Sea Dragon.
The Sea Dragon's really cool. I would put it as an analog kind of to the Helion from the Destroyer side and Lords of Cthulhu. It's got a really respectable 2-white, 3-boost brawl. It also has Sever on its brawl, which has a lot of really big implications for units. A lot of unit-to-unit combat can have repercussions. Stuff like Unstable, Spike Shield, like you saw on the Kraken Hatchling, can really put a hamper on that. But the Sever rule will get around that. On top of that, it also has the Aegis special rule, so it is immune to actions that your opponents control. So it's going to be really hard to remove this sucker.
Man, talk about a Swiss Army Shark Dragon. So I think that sums up really neatly the faction interplay that we have here. Let's talk about the impact this has on the agenda as a whole. So we have a new monster swimming into the mix, and then we have units who now have synergy with tons of other units that can overlap in your list. Marin, what's your favorite new synergy?
Ooh, it's so hard to pick. I think it has to be the combination. So like I just mentioned with Catapult and the Sun Industries building, I really like combining that with Zor Magna, who has the Shadow Step special rule, so that when any of her units, when any Shadow Sun faction units perform an advance that isn't their free full advance each turn, she can spend a red die and move a different one of her own units 3 spaces, which, you know, if I'm just doing that for free at the start of my turn, I can get 7 extra spaces of movement on across 2 models, which is amazing.
Yeah, that is very zoomy and gets you to deep places across the board to go fight in enemy territory. Rob, you're up, buddy. What's your favorite synergy in the agenda now that you have access to these new Tritons?
I'm a big fan of brawl attacks, so the Orca Huntsman's been a really great addition for me. I have a lot of the times where I'll have a backline Carnadon doing a lot of work for me. So now with the Orca Huntsman, the Carnadon's going to get an extra couple boost dice, as well as being able to reposition to wherever I need him to with the tag trigger. You know, flank on the Carnadon plus the Scout can make some really, really accurate attacks for only a little bit of investment on it.
Nice.
Yeah, and I actually, speaking of a lot of extra boost dice, actually very recently got to, after using the annex action on the Ketos Crab faction base for the Tritons, have the Sea Dragon combine in a brawl attack with the Temple Giant and get a massive cleave attack with six boost dice with only two units participating.
So good. That's, I mean, it's damage. Five action dice worth of units, but in two units. I think my new, like, favorite unit, the Sea Dragon being fast, mobile, good hitter, and then having some protection when it gets there is amazing. And I think it does a lot for Tritons as well, especially when we look at one of the newer buildings. So the Toxic Waste Depot, just a very recent release, has that metastasize action that lets you create another faction unit one cost adjacent to that unit. So I love to catapult the Sea Dragon up and just have it screaming across the table, then metastasize out an orca and have them, you know, punch something and then tag into relevant positions.
Use Beachhead to get a orca out and then had it metastasize out another orca that I could then tag into position. And I got, I think, two kills with just the orcas coming out of there. I think it basically took the entire side of the map PowerPoint-wise as well in the process.
Yeah, that was also one of those times where every time we played a game, you found a new way to really strike fear into my heart with the Toxic Waste Depot.
That building is so fun.
And Marin sure as hell plays it well.
I'll take the compliment where I can get it.
Speaking of buildings, so I think something that is definitely worth a relook is the Kato's Crab. I think for a while, we had often referred to the Kato's Crab as being okay, but having one of the best, you know, discounts in the game, despite not having access to that many units. And that just got a lot better. Now we have more units that are all very valuable and worth discounting, on top of new movement tricks, which work really well with the faction base ability to move around the map. So where is your head at reassessing these new space for this building? This new space for this building.
Oh, Triton base stock is absolutely way up right now. But like you said, the Kraken Hatchling having Beachhead really is going to play into that annex, because it's easier to secure the building and then you can move all your friends at once to the annex action.
And importantly, you can, because you can place the units that come, a bunch of units with the Kato's Crab when it annexes, you can put that Kraken Hatchling on an objective space next to the new foundation, much further than it could have gotten with its measly 4 speed anyway, and then catapult one of the units you brought with you. It's great.
It's so good. And, you know, that's something that you can kind of figure out as you look at more maps and you play more games, is that almost every foundation has some kind of relevant objective space nearby. And so this is a very easy way to bring a whole hunting party up the board and ready to fight. I think we can round out and finish up here with talking about how Archipelagon fits in to the grander picture for the game and the agenda. As far as list building goes, where is your head at, Rob? Where do you immediately reach for as a pair for Archipelagon? How do you see playing the Big Turtle?
So any monster that can potentially have ultimate weapon, I think, is going to really need a power battery friend. So if he's getting that big, you know, three attacks, he's not going to really be able to benefit from it at that point. But I'm always a big fan of Defender X. It's one of my favorite monsters, especially after the rework and the yearly update. I think he feels like a natural pair, just because if you got that ultimate weapon stance, or ultimate weapon setup, you're probably going to have, you know, gotten a good run at a Defender X before then. And that monster generates power like crazy. Beyond absolutely. That... Safeguard
is great because it helps secure buildings, which we just talked about, a ton of buildings that you want to secure with these new packages. Disruption can help with that defense 10 as well, if you can help make those attacks harder against Archie.
Yeah, beyond that, I'm a huge fan of good clean Monpok, and I am the, I think, the biggest Gakira stan around. So I'll always recommend pairing him with anything. I think that's a good combination for a lot of good clean Monpok, a lot of cool stuff you can do with a bunch of attacks. Just feels good.
Awesome. Actually, Kakura was going to be one that I suggested as well, because you can really double down on, if you've got a Kakura has the rule improvised weapon. So as soon as there's any debris out on the table, you can start really scaling the boost dice that you're getting. You can be making 7 boost power attacks with Gakura after taking a Scald collateral damage shot with Archipelagon. It's incredible.
So my top 3 favorite pairs for Archie, I call them the natural disasters. So Magmacon generates a ton of power, is also really hard to interact with because of fireproof. And so you really have to think about how you're going to unpack those two monsters and how they're going to interact with you. Right behind that, Hurricaneous, a starter box monster, I know, but I think that there is a lot of great interplay with her having tailwinds and being able to make Archie high mobility. So again, your opponent has to choose how they put you into hyper and what the order is going to be. And then also having Blitz to help those Triton units move around. She loves the Archie setup, being able to get additional boosts that work her into her Unrelenting Storm boost or vice versa. She loves to go in and set it up so that Archie can get the big Sever ending. That's 2 of them. The 3rd one being the Queen of Imiqui. I really like how hummingbirds have disruption with her, and you can create a pretty large bubble within 5 of her to have those hummingbirds then putting disruption out beyond that. And that really plays in with that great 10 defense. And then Flicker is just one of my favorite rules. It's a global repositioning. And so when it comes to neat positional tricks, they can really take advantage of Flicker. So that's my natural disasters. But I really think that Archie could pair with anybody. Like, it's just a really good monster.
I do happen to notice that you picked a couple monsters that can all make 3 attacks at their activations, depending on the setup.
I have a type.
I mean, hey, I was going to suggest literally all of the dragons. And hey, you know what Zybanos has? Ultimate weapon.
Ultimate weapon.
Oh, yeah.
But just like with Kakura, I really enjoy doubling down on that high boost dice potential or doubling down on another mechanic, which is being able to really easily de-screen an alpha. And Rastaban has that range 5 strafe gun. Mm-hmm. Gaussimal has telekinesis. Zybanos has ultimate weapon and hyper and a 5 boost demolition punch in alpha. And then the other monster that I really recommend is Cassander, who's just, again, able to just churn out those boost dice and make super accurate attacks.
It seems like we've covered a lot of ground in such a short amount of time. Is there anything else you would like to talk about before we're out of here?
I don't have anything to plug right now, so nothing for me, unfortunately.
Okay. Yeah, I'm fresh out of input. Sorry.
It's been a long day for me.
Thank you both for your time and coming in and talking with me. Also, I believe you write articles with Smash U. Is that correct?
I mean, I do.
Yeah, Marin has been. I still need to write that painting article for them.
Scallops is like, Rob's like, I kind of do.
Yeah, occasionally, if I have thoughts that I want to put down about the game, you'll find them on Smashville University, run by a very prolific member of the community named Daniel. You can find it is what it says on the tin there, Smashville University. If you just type that into your good old browser search engine, whatever you prefer, you'll find it pretty quick. My byline's going to be on there. I'll be Marin. And yeah, I've done the Necroscourge faction article, which should come as no surprise to anyone who knows me.
Yeah, Daniel is great. And that was actually what I wanted to plug too. So those faction articles have been great primers for both new players to look at and say, you know, this kind of gives me a comprehensive look at some of these and gives it a bite-sized bit of information, because the whole agenda sometimes can be a lot to chew on. But then they're really great insight into players' heads and how you perceive the game and how things interact. And so they're very well thought out. The pictures and everything all match really well. I can't be a big enough fan myself. So every time there's a new article that drops, I know I'm one of the first ones to go read it, and everybody else should too.
Oh yeah, Daniel's been putting a lot of love and effort into that website, and it's really been an incredible resource for the community. So definitely, definitely big props to him.
Yeah, most definitely. So thank you all for tuning in to Primecast, and we have more to come with Primecast Plus right around the corner, and I'm sure you'll hear from us soon. In the meantime, follow Privateer Press social media channels for whatever's coming next. Want to say roll drums?
Roll drums.
Okay, are we saying roll drums or are we doing a drum roll? Because this is up every time.
Wait a minute. So when have we ever done a drum roll? I've totally had done the like roll drums and then you both say roll drums. I've never just been like, you know what we need is we all just drum roll. Like,
I'm always confused about what you mean by this, which is probably because I don't actually listen to the podcast, which I shouldn't say while we're still recording.
That's okay. So it actually is kind of a tradition that calls back to the original Primecast. The sound snip is a Primecast, you know, like back in the day original soundbite. And okay. I thought I would absolutely love to use it in our new Primecast episodes. And so when I ask people if they want to say roll drums, it's an honorific to both call back to the original Primecast, but to also, you know, put the spotlight on you for a second and allow you to participate in the tradition, which is very important to me and which I continue with every guest that we have on here because it is just that, it's a fun tradition. So with gusto, 3, 2, 1,
roll drums.
Oh my God, we did it!